Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sari Ibrahim. Today, I'm interviewing John Kasman. He's an entrepreneur and real estate investor who has helped busy professionals invest over $100 million in multifamily housing. John also consults active multifamily investors to help them start or grow their business. He hosts the Multifamily Insight podcast, formerly known as Target Market Insights, and is a co-creator of the Midwest Real Estate Networking Summit. Prior to becoming a full-time investor, John worked in corporate America overseeing marketing campaigns for General Motors, Nike, and Coors Light. John, welcome to our podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, man. Excited to be here today. And you know, let's jump into things.
Yeah, I'm excited to interview you and get to know you a little bit more. I was on your podcast recently, and it was nice being on your podcast. I know the topic of today's episode is going to be about real estate and specifically what type of real estate you're involved in. But before we jump into that, I want to know more about you and your background.
Yeah, I mean, listen, in a nutshell, I spent 15 years in corporate America doing advertising and marketing for big brands and large companies you've heard of, from General Motors to Nike, Coors Light, Mountain Dew, a lot of fun stuff, right? And I enjoyed it. You know, a lot of people have their job and they can't wait to quit. I loved what I was doing. The problem was I didn't control my time. And this is something I think a lot of people understand as well. And it hit me really hard, you know, around my son's fourth birthday, my oldest son. I had to go on a shoot and I just couldn't get out of it. So it was his birthday. I was there for the birthday party, right? So he didn't care. He was fine. But I missed his actual birthday. I was on set. I remember FaceTiming him. And it just really made me feel a certain way. And, you know, you talk about your goals and your why. And, you know, a lot of us talk about we do this for our family. We work really hard for our family. But if you're not there and you're not present for your family, it makes you really just step back and ask yourself, you know, are your priorities really your priorities? So just something I had to think about. You know, I say my family is my priority, but really work was my priority. And it just made me say, okay, you know, we really got to take this thing to another level. And I'd started already investing in real estate. So this was like the last straw, really. But it really started because when I was at GM, I was there when we went through bankruptcy and I watched my peers, my colleagues get let go. And that kind of let me know that, you know, you can't depend on a W-2 job forever. So that slowly got me into real estate, slowly started building up my own personal portfolio. And then as I started working with other people, I had that incident happen with my son's birthday. And that was the last trigger to say, you know what? You need to put things in motion to go full time, you know, larger apartment buildings and make this your reality going forward.
So I'm listening that you went from working corporate America 15 years and you transitioned into real estate. From what I'm hearing, two main things: control of time and diversifying your income.
Absolutely.
And what else was there? What are the benefits of their investing in real estate besides those two? I know those two are big, but what else can one benefit from investing in real estate?
Well, before you even go there, like the biggest thing for me was like when I started this journey, I didn't really understand real estate at all, but I knew that at least 90% of the world's millionaires held a part of their portfolio in real estate. And you've heard that quote many different ways, right? 90% of the world's millionaires are in real estate. Bottom line is people with money buy real estate. Yeah. So I said, you know what, before I try to figure out everything, let me just get the real estate piece. Let me figure out real estate. And as I started my research, my journey, books I was reading, events I was going to, you know, anything I could read or listen to, one thing that became clear was multifamily in particular was the thing that stood out. So I really set out to invest in multifamily apartments. And that's where the journey started for me. And the reason multifamily is so popular is for some of the benefits you were getting to, right? You have cash flow, which is going to be the passive income you get each month from the rental income you're receiving. You have the appreciation potential. So these apartments typically go up in value over time. Mm-hmm. So maybe it ebbs and flows a little bit depending on when you buy. But over the long haul, they tend to go up in value. So you've got cash flow, you've got appreciation. But then you start getting into the things that I think really set it apart. You've got the tax benefits. Mm-hmm. And you may not understand this, but one of the reasons the wealthy invest in real estate is there are tremendous tax advantages. I mentioned that appreciation where the values go up. Well, the way real estate is treated from a tax standpoint, they actually depreciate, which means that they go down in value from a tax standpoint. So wrap your head around what I just said. These things tend to go up in value, but from a tax standpoint, they tend to go down in value. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, right? Mm-hmm. You've got something that's going up, it's making you more money, but you get to say, hey, it's actually worth less, right? It's worth less than what I bought it for. And that's true. That's the way the tax code is written. It's not, you know, something slippery.
Yeah.
This is the way taxes work. So it's a great tool for the wealthy to write off a portion of their taxes and a portion of their debt so that they don't have to pay additional taxes. So then you get into that. Now you get leverage, right? You get to take out a loan. So a bank can provide you 50, 60, 70, 80% of the proceeds to buy this property. You can't get that really in stocks and other investments. Yeah. So this is what sets real estate apart, but multifamily in particular, because it's attainable for most people. You know, you may not understand self-storage or hotels or, you know, other asset classes, but most people have stayed at an apartment, or you've visited an apartment. You at least understand what the concept of somebody living in an apartment is, right? Mm-hmm. So people pay rent. You know, they stay there for a year. They may renew their lease. There's certain expenses, and the money that's left over after all the expenses, that's your profit. Mm-hmm. So you at least conceptually get multifamily investing. And I think that's really key too, because it's simple and attainable enough that people can wrap their head around it. But it's also something that, you know, is all around us. So multifamily is really, really attractive for those reasons. Strong demand, both from a renter standpoint, also from an investor standpoint. You got the cash flow, you have the tax benefits, you got the appreciation, and you can use a loan or leverage to buy these properties.
Yeah, those are really big ones. I really like the leverage component. In other words, like, you know, $1 could buy $4 of an asset. So that creates the ability to buy more things, to go beyond your current net worth and beyond your current liquidity to buy more. And it also ties in with the tax benefits, right? Because in some situations, you can increase your tax savings through leverage by being able to buy things, multiplying your money, be able to multiply that tax loss, the good win, right? The depreciation. Who can typically benefit from the tax benefits? Is it anybody, or do you have to be a real estate professional to get like the most tax benefits?
Yeah, everyone can benefit, but the people who benefit the most are absolutely those tax or the real estate professionals. Real estate professionals, I would also say business owners or folks who have passive income, right? If you already have passive income through businesses you own or other ventures, then you can take advantage of this. Now, it makes sense to talk to your own CPA and kind of confirm your own situation. But if you are a full-time real estate professional, a real estate agent, or, you know, some other real estate professional, you should absolutely be looking to invest in some of the deals. And what we're talking about here is you don't have to necessarily buy the properties yourself and manage them yourself and run it. We actually work with everyday investors so they get all the perks of owning real estate without the headaches of being a landlord. And it's a great way for you to invest. It's called syndication, mm-hmm. but you can partner with a group like ours where we go out there, we vet the markets, vet the deals, we put to get the deals together. We're going to bring investors together and bring all the capital, and then we're going to manage the asset. We're going to hire any of our vendors or property management companies. We're going to oversee them. And that allows you to simply take advantage of our time, our efforts, our resources, so that you can get, you know, again, the cash flow, the tax benefits, the appreciation upside, all those beautiful perks without you having to be in charge of the day to day. And if you're a real estate professional, it's great because what happens from a tax standpoint is you get to write off those losses, the depreciation, the paper losses we're talking about here. You get to write them off against your earned income. Mm-hmm. And it's only true for real estate professionals. So if you have a W-2 job, yes, it's great that you can, you know, get these tax benefits, but they kind of, you know, they tend to kind of accumulate over time or accrue until you can actually use them, until you have some passive losses that you can, or passive gains that you can use them against. But if you're a real estate professional, even if you are typically paying taxes on, you know, the income you earned on selling a house or whatever it is, you get to take these losses against that earned income. So that's a really powerful tool for anyone who does qualify as a real estate professional. Again, I'm not a CPA. Yeah. I'm not licensed. This is not tax advice. So please reach out to someone in your network, a CPA. And to be honest with you, you want to talk to a real estate CPA.
Yeah.
Your CPA may not even be aware of this, right? A lot of times the tax accountants, the folks who are doing your taxes, they're not as privy to tax strategy. There's a difference between, you know, doing your taxes and being a tax accountant, you know, an accountant who does taxes, and actually understanding tax strategy. So this is that next level, you know, cheat code level tip that you really need to find the right people in your circle who can help you unlock the potential for your own financial gains and your financial goals.
Yeah, definitely. I agree 100%. I think typically, I don't want to generalize and say all CPAs, obviously, because all CPAs are different. But for the most part, when it comes time to do your taxes, it's more reactionary. It's, all right, how much do we claim in deductions, credits, you know, this year, and then try to pay the least amount of money in taxes this year. Whereas tax planning is more long term. It's more strategic. It's more thought out, like over the next 20 years, how do we, in some situations, eliminate taxes over the next 20, you know, 10, 20 years, which is what we do with like using the bank on yourself strategy, all, you know, alongside other investments like real estate or other things. And I want to kind of go back to the tax benefits. That was really important because in most situations, you have three kinds of income, right? You have active, portfolio, and passive. And usually each one has their own lane. You can only take losses against those types of gains, like active gains, active losses, portfolio gains, portfolio losses, and passive income and passive losses. But when you're a real estate professional, you could take the losses against any type of income, which is huge. So that means if you're a realtor or a real estate professional and you made money from commissions from active income, and let's just say you also made money from stocks, and then you have losses from the syndication that you have, you could take the losses, potentially take the losses from there against all types of income, which is huge, not just the real estate income, but all types of income. Again,
and just to clarify, when you say losses, that doesn't mean that you actually lost money, right? Yeah. It just means that it's a paper loss. And I just want to make sure this is really, really clear. And I want to use an example. Let's say you were to invest $100,000 in a typical syndication deal. Yeah. You may get a 7% return that year, okay?
Yeah.
So if you invest $100,000, you made $7,000 in profit. You received it. You've got the money. It's in your bank account, right? You got $7,000 in profit. When it comes to the taxes, there's something called depreciation, and then there's bonus depreciation. I won't bore you with the details, but the bottom line is you may see a loss when you get your K-1 statement, when you do your taxes. You may see a loss of like $50,000.
Yeah.
So you made $7,000, right? Your $100,000 initial investment is still in the deal, hasn't lost any money, it's still there. But on paper, when you go to pay your taxes, it may say that you lost $50,000. That's what we're talking about. You didn't actually lose the money, but it's depreciation. As we're looking at the asset, we're saying it went down in value over time. And that's what makes this so powerful, that you can actually make money. You made $7,000. You're going to, you know, say you lost $50,000, and then you can apply that against other money you actually made, right? Yeah. You made commissions of $50,000. Well, guess what? Now when you do your taxes, it's going to say you didn't make any money, right? If that's the only deal you did, you'll say, hey, zero income, right? So that's what makes this a powerful tool, particularly for real estate professionals. Again, I got to keep throwing that disclaimer out there. Yeah. I am not a CPA. I'm not a tax professional. I'm not a fiduciary. So you need to talk to the people in your network. But conceptually, you can understand why people get really excited about strategies like this and how it can impact their own financial goals.
Yeah, I'm excited too, just listening to this. And I want to go back to when you were talking about syndication, how you can leverage your time, your expertise, your resources, that would be taking the role of a limited partner, right? So could you mind sharing with us what is the difference between a limited partner and an active partner?
Absolutely. So there's active or passive, general partner or limited partner, really same idea, same concept, interchangeable terms. The active team, that general partnership team, they are the ones who are overseeing the deal. So they're finding the deal, they're getting the loan for the deal, qualifying for the loan for the deal. They're managing due diligence. They're bringing all the capital together, so raising the capital. They are the ones who are going to oversee the asset and make sure the deal actually is successful. A limited partner or passive investor, they are simply putting up the money and investing in the deal. Now, in return for that, they get shares. So just like you can buy shares of Apple, you can buy shares into Apple, the company, you can buy shares into these private deals. Now, unlike Apple, where you can go onto, you know, the Dow Jones or NASDAQ or wherever it's traded, you know, you can't just go in there and stroke a check and say, hey, give me 50 shares, right? In these deals, these are private deals. So we typically have a private placement memorandum, or PPM. And all that really means is that this is a private deal where you have to have some sort of relationship. You have to qualify to be involved in a deal like this. And if you do that, there's a mutual agreement. You can come in and be an investor on a deal like that. And you get all the perks, all the benefits of owning it because you are a shareholder. You are an owner of the property. You have your shares, but you don't have the same responsibility. And the term limited partner, that limited kind of implies to liability. So you have very limited liability because you're not making day-to-day decisions. You're not the one who is, you know, on the phone with the asset manager. You're not the one who's signing on the loan. So you have no responsibility for the loan. And in fact, the only risk you have is the capital that you've invested in the deal. Yeah. Now you want to read the PPM and make sure that's, you know, that is, there's no other clauses in there. But typically speaking, that's the only risk you have is the money you invested, right? So what happens is as a limited partner, you want to make sure that you are finding the right team, you understand the market, you understand the risk of the deal, and you're investing with people who you believe in and you believe in their business plan. And if you do that, you understand where the risks are, you want to ask those questions, right? And it's nothing wrong to ask and say, hey, what could go wrong? How could this deal go sideways? Yeah. What concerns do you have about this deal? But if you can get answers to that that make you feel comfortable, well, now you might have a great opportunity to invest in a deal that can make you money, give you the cash flow, the appreciation potential, the depreciation losses, tax benefits we talked about, and some equity upside. So those are the deals we're looking at. And I think it's a really great way for people to get involved in real estate, particularly if you're not seasoned. Because I think the mistake people make is they hear conversations like this, they get excited about investing in real estate, but they have zero experience and they're not going to take the time and energy to read all the books I've read or listen to all the podcasts and attend all the events and start slow and grow. So they just jump into it, not knowing what they don't know. So you've got this inexperienced investor buying a property and it's a small property typically. So if they're wrong or they make a mistake, you know, they're either, you know, if you buy a 2-unit, you're 100% occupied, 50% occupied, or 0% occupied. Yeah. So if you have one vacancy, one person moves out, you're down to 50%. Can you cover all your bills with, you know, one person paying rent? Maybe, maybe not. Those are the issues you start to run into. So it's actually more risky for you doing it by yourself as a novice investor with, you know, really just one or two clients. Versus, you know, the deals we typically do are going to be 75 units and up.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, 100 plus unit complexes. If one person moves out, I mean, that's 1% of the residents moving out. It's not a big deal. We actually forecast that and plan it.
Yeah.
We're going to have people moving out all the time. We expect a 35 to 50% turnover on our properties, right? So all of this is in the budget where we're forecasting this. It's not to say that you don't, you know, adjust that and maybe you miss it slightly, but we can plan for that better than someone who, you know, you were 100% occupied and now you're at 0%, or you had a roof leak or a furnace that went out and now you got to spend $5,000 or $15,000 on something that is going to wipe out the profits, not just for this year, but for the next 2 years. So those are the things that I think people don't think about enough when they are looking to invest. And it's much easier to, you know, stretch out that risk on larger deals than it is trying to do something yourself, especially if it's your first time buying into real estate.
Yeah. And I like the idea. It's shared risk, right?
Mitigated risk, right? Because you're it's more professional.
Yeah.
You've got professional property management companies, professional contractors, you have professional investors. So all of those things allow us to approach it with a more disciplined eye than maybe that newer solo investor can do by themselves.
Yeah, because one mistake on one property, like you said, could wipe out your profits for the next 2 years or even longer, depending on what happened. I makes a lot more sense, right? When you have a syndication, you could take on more things. You could do more things. You could absorb more risk. More importantly, mitigate that risk. Now, let's just say you're coming across a property, right? Like, what are you looking for from the standpoint of the general partner? What are you looking for to make sure it's a good deal?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? So I think it goes back to risk, and we want to understand what the risks are. And the risks really don't change. You know, the risks are going to be a couple things, right? You have property risk, which means something happening at the property. You know, so there's that due diligence process of the physical property itself. But before we get in there, we want to talk about the economy. I want to know about the market risk. I want to know about the legislative list, right? The political risk. Is this an area that's going to grow or are people trying to leave here? So I want to understand that climate. What's the business climate like? Is the population growing? Are jobs growing? Is it easy to do business in this area? So we're looking at that first and foremost, and that's going to help us determine where exactly we're going to look for deals and where we're going to invest. We prefer to be in places where it's easy to do business. You know, I prefer landlord-friendly markets. It's not 100% of a mandate, but we obviously want it to be easy to do business and what we're trying to do. We definitely want to be in areas that are growing, even if it's the sub-market. We want to see growth. I want to see demand increasing, right? Because that's going to make it easier to do business. It's hard to do business when people are fleeing an area. If you want to invest in a market, but people are leaving because there's a lack of jobs or they're just not happy with, you know, the politics or whatever it is, it's going to be harder for you to do your own business, right? You're going to run into a lot of the issues that these people face. You're not going to have the jobs. You can't be a one-man show and, you know, bring everything to the table. So those are the things that we're looking at first and foremost. So we're trying to mitigate risk based on the economic factors. Then we're going to look at, you know, the property itself, and we want to see, you know, what condition is the property in? What's our business plan? We prefer things that are a little bit newer. So 1985 to, you know, 2000s construction is what we typically look for. Those are properties where, you know, they should be pretty solid, but maybe they need some cosmetic work. We are open to properties that are a little bit older, but now you're starting to get into, you know, those foundational things. You're looking at, you know, the HVAC systems, you're looking at the mechanicals, you're looking at the roofs, you're looking at all these different components, and you have to understand, what does the property actually need to be functioning for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? So it gets a little bit more risky as you get into the age of the property. The location, you know, is this in a affluent, high-end luxury type of property, or is this more of workforce housing, a little more, just I don't want to say challenging, but you're going to have people who are dealing with different issues. You know, maybe it's a little hard for them to pay rent. Maybe economic changes impact them a little bit harder if they get laid off from their job. But those kind of things, right? So what are the risks involved there? Those are things that I'm looking at. And then finally, I'm going to look at our business plan. You know, what do we think we can do? Do we have proof in the marketplace? Can we point to other apartment complexes that have been able to achieve the thing that we want to achieve, whether it be higher rents, whether it's, you know, improving the operations, whatever it is, I want to see proof in the marketplace, right? I don't want to be guessing. I want to see some points where it says, hey, these three complexes are getting XYZ, or these two are getting XYZ. You know, if we do what they've done, we should be able to achieve something similar. So we want to see proof of concept in the marketplace when we develop our business plan. So we're not just, you know, pitching in the dark and hoping we're going to be successful. So all those things are the way we look at risk and we mitigate risk. There are certainly other factors that I don't have time to get into today, but that's the way we think about risk, right? There's market risk. There's going to be property risk, the physical property risk, and there's going to be risk in the execution of our business plan.
Got it. That makes sense. And I'm sure a big one from the economy standpoint is interest rates, right? Interest rates going up. How has that changed so far with your current plans, the rise in interest rates?
Yeah, I mean, listen, rise in interest rates certainly is going to impact underwriting and projections and things like that. One of the big things is just not to rely solely on interest rates. You know, cheap debt has encouraged more deals and more transactions, and it's made it difficult for your average buyer to get into the market over the last few years, even on a residential side, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the reason you're seeing people where, you know, I know 6 months ago, a year ago, you had people who were in these situations where it's like 30, 40 offers on one house, which is just wild and unimaginable, right? Yeah, in 2 days, right? So it's just wild and unimaginable. But again, when debt was super cheap, people could do that. And now I think we're going back into an era where it's maybe a little more subtle. You know, it's a little more what we can expect, where your underwriting matters a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you can go in there with a business plan and make things work. I would say this. I know that some people may get scared with rising interest rates and say, hey, I want to wait it out. I don't think waiting is ever a good strategy. You know, there's certainly times to be more aggressive and say, you know what, things are on sale and I want to gather as many assets as I can during this economy. But no one has a crystal ball. And I think a lot of times you listen to people, no matter how intelligent they sound, where they feel like they can predict the future and they're telling you to wait, or it's going to be a bad crash, or it's going to be this. And most of the time those people are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they just don't know. So I believe in the fundamentals, you know, stick to your fundamentals. When you're underwriting a deal, I like to buy a deal that's going to cash flow for us when we first buy it. I want to buy something where we can force appreciation, which means we're going to control the valuation. I want to find ways to increase that NOI or net operating income so the property is making more money. If it makes more money, it's going to be worth more money. So we want to find ways to drive that so we control it. And then we want to control when we sell. So the loan is really the key for that, because if we don't have to sell early, then we can wait out, you know, changes in the marketplace. We can wait out marketplace volatility. But if we have to sell in 2 years, then that makes it challenging for us. So we try to stick to those fundamentals as best we can. That gives us a lot of flexibility in the marketplace, and we can adjust and adapt as needed. I just think timing the market or waiting for the market to bottom out, I just think those strategies are very dangerous. And quite frankly, you could be sitting and waiting a long time. And in fact, I literally know people who have not bought anything in the last 6 years because they've been waiting for the market to drop. And the reality is they're probably not going to be in a great position to buy today because they haven't been buying for 6 years, and all that quote unquote dry powder that they've had. Well, inflation has taken away the value of a lot of the funds they had sitting around. So now what? You know, your $1 million is worth much less than that in today's environment. So I just think it's important to always be looking to invest, make sound investments, and, you know, give yourself flexibility on when you exit those investments.
Yeah, plus the 6 years that this person's been waiting, it's also a loss of investment experience. They could have
you could have exited a deal or two in that same time frame, right? You could have been in and out of a deal by the same time you were waiting.
Yeah, exactly. And I heard a quote. It was like, don't wait to buy real estate, buy real estate and wait.
Absolutely. And I think that quote encapsulates exactly what we're talking about. You know, if you buy it and wait, you'll be fine. I think if you buy it and you're trying to flip it immediately, now you're trying to time the market, right? If you've got to sell it in 6 months, and this is my concern with like house flippers.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the issue is really big, because you kind of have to sell in a certain time frame to make your profits. And that's where I think you can get in trouble. But if you can buy, if you can hold it as long as you need to hold it, which is why cash flow is so key.
Yeah.
Because if you have cash flow, then you can hold it as long as you need to. If you buy it, but you're really just hoping it appreciates and you're going to just, you know, you want to sell it once it goes up in value, whatever it is, that's where you can get in trouble as well, right? Because you don't have, you may not have the cash flow to get you through any rough patches. And I've talked to investors who have bought properties for appreciation that they pay out of their pocket each month on the mortgage payment, because in their mind, well, in 3 or 4 years, it's going to be worth twice as much. And that's a scary proposition for me, because what if they're wrong? And if they're wrong, now they've got this asset that is basically tanking. Yeah. That they've been paying out of their pocket, and they may never get that money back, right? Yeah. So they don't have that same luxury of just waiting it out and riding the wave, because they've been losing every money every month for the last couple of years, and it looks like it's only going to get worse. So for us, I think the cash flow is really, really key. It allows you some flexibility and affords you time. And that's just the way we like to look at the business.
Yeah, definitely, John. It was really nice having you on the podcast and interviewing you and getting to know the way you think about real estate. How can listeners connect with you and learn more about you?
Well, listen, if you heard us talk about apartment investing and it seems like something you want to learn more about, whether you want to be active or you want to be passive, like we discussed, we have a sample deal package on our website. You can go to kasmancapital.com/sample deal. That will also get you on our newsletter and our email list. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is, like, after you get that initial deal package, we send you some follow-up emails that'll help you understand what we look for and questions to ask when you are evaluating a deal or an opportunity. So if you want to just learn more and start wrapping your head around this information, even if you don't want to be the main person doing it yourself, but you just want to figure out what questions you should ask so you can get these benefits, you should check that out. And again, it's on our website, kasmancapital.com/sample deal.
Got it, John. I'll put those links in the show notes below. It was a pleasure having you on, and looking forward to bringing you back on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me today.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.